Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I haven't seen you in forever, so it's good to catch up, see what's going on. We were in,
Yeah.
what, NASCAR Next in 2016. So,
2016,
and
that's when we
then.
met. I was looking back through my texts and it was like, oh, trying to connect with you. And the last texts we had were 2018 in Canada at Mosport. And you were asking if there
Was
was
it that
any
long
cute
ago?
girls, yeah, at the bonfire. And I said they were all too old for you.
Yeah, I was a youngin' back then. We went up and raced that Pinty Series race.
Yeah. How much different do you think the Pinty's cars are from the K&N cars?
So they're not a whole lot different. Maybe just like the brakes are a little better on the K&N cars. Did you ever drive like an Xfinity car at all?
Never.
You drove the trucks, so like imagine the stopping power in a truck. They just slow down a lot quicker. But the K&N cars did, I felt like. But the motors were still super big, I felt like, for the Pinty's cars. I love that Pinty's race up there at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park up in Mossport. That was so much fun. And there's like really, really well respected road course guys that, I was going up there because we were racing the trucks that year, and I didn't know what to expect. I knew DJ Kennington, still really good buddies with him, and got the opportunity to drive up there and get a feel for the track and stuff, and just had so much fun. If I could go race like any series, the Pinty Series is kind of, that's got to be one of the most fun races I've ever been a part of. Just the group of guys and girls are just so fun to be around up there racing. It's everybody goes to have a good time, and then they also go to race, so that's what I really loved about it. But those cars are, they're badass.
Yeah, they're good. They're like, they just haven't. I mean, I guess they've changed a little bit, but like, everyone who's been running there, so many of those guys were running the Pinty Series or CASCAR, like what it was called back in the day. Like, there's probably five or six guys who have been racing since the 80s in that
It's
series.
crazy. Do you know, have you run any, when's the last race you run in that? Did you run last year? No,
Yeah, we
this
ran the
past
whole
year?
season
Oh, you
last
did?
year.
Yeah.
And yeah,
You
yep.
know that, Alex, I don't know how to say his
Alex
last,
LeBay.
no, it starts with a G. I don't know how to say his last,
Gannett, Alex
Gannett,
Gannett.
Alex
Yep.
Gannett. Yeah, he was my teammate down in Florida. I got to know him really well. We raced the Snowball Derby for late models, and so we got to know each other. He's a fun dude.
Yeah. Like, I guess you might know more than I would. Him and Lessard were kind of like sent down and raced late models, like mostly when they were younger down there.
He like raced late model races down there and stuff. It was cool to see his progression throughout the weekend, and see he's kind of still raw to it. So I feel like I've been doing the stock car stuff a while now. It kind of reminds me of when we were all in NASCAR Next and we didn't really know what we were doing. We just were having fun and doing all that we could do. But if we would have known what we know now, we would have been so much better. So him coming up to me throughout the weekend saying like, man, like how do you know so much about the car and stuff? I'm like, I really don't. Like, I don't know as much as like Kyle Busch or guys like that, but in the right areas, that's where I try and focus on just telling the crew chief and engineers and stuff. And so he was kind of all spun out about just the amount of feedback that I was talking about with the car and whatnot. But it was really cool just to see kind of another perspective of, I was once in his shoes too, and to see kind of where he's at. And I'm like, you'll get there, just it takes time. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah, no, and you've definitely put in your time now, and I've had, a fraction of the seat time that you've had, and maybe only like a less than a handful of starts, say like in trucks and stuff. And each time I get in a truck, it's like, oh my goodness, I've learned, something so big. I can't believe I even went out and raced last year not knowing this.
Yeah, it's
Like,
crazy.
how many of those kind of quantum leaps have you had in your career?
Oh, so many. Like I look back year after year and just kind of see when you're in it. So like this year at Phoenix, we were racing for a championship in the Xfinity Series, and I'm like, this is the best I've ever been. I feel good. Like I know what I need to do. But I'll get to next year at the end of next year, and I'll be like, damn, I was fucking shit last year. Like I was terrible. And if I would have known what I know now, I would have been so much better. I probably could have won, you know? So, just little things like that. But it really does take time, and just finding new techniques, really studying the data. That's been the biggest thing for me is simulation. I feel like the simulation with the manufacturer. So we're with Chevrolet, and I used to go to the simulator every week before races when I first started in Xfinity in 2019. And from week in and week out, I started learning the tracks and starting getting the visual cues and whatnot of what I wanted out of these tracks and to learn and get better with. Well, now I don't really go to this simulator as much as I used to when I first got started because I needed that first 95%. How's the car supposed to drive? You know, what's it kind of gonna feel like when I get to the racetrack? And then once you get those reps in at the racetrack, you get practice, you get through qualifying. I was on my fourth year this past year in 2022, so I knew the feel that I needed when I got to the racetrack. So I didn't do as much simulation as I first started, but there's so many things that you just learn, you know, throughout the years. You learn how to communicate. I think communication is the biggest and most important resource you can have as a driver and to your team, except at least in NASCAR, because we don't have all the live data on the cars, like maybe sports car. I don't know how IndyCar is, but definitely looking at F1, they can tell you each and everything you're doing, and where you need to improve. Where in the Xfinity series, we don't have any of that stuff. So really, just being on the same page as the crew chief and the engineers, and having a game plan before you go into the race. So I'll tell a funny story. We were at Pocono earlier this year, and we started doing this deal where we would watch back practice on TV, kind of in the downtime in between practice and qualifying. They'd be back to back in the race, and I'd be like, okay, so this guy, he's taking, you know, bigger arc in the corner. We'll call that the Gary line. And then I'm taking more of a shallower approach into the corner. We'll call that the Noah line. And then we'll say running the second lane, that's the Riddick line. So instead of being in the race and them saying, hey, I think you need to open up your arc and you need to get to the bottom at the same spot, but you need to open up your arc, and spending two or three sentences on the radio, they can just say, hey, run the Gary line. And so we were going over what we wanted those. They're not really code words, but they're just a way to make it more efficient. And Allgaier had sat on the pole. We just got done with qualifying. Allgaier, my teammate, sat on the pole. We qualified like ninth. And he comes up there. He's like, man, this isn't, you guys are making this way too complicated than it really needs to be. Like, what are you guys doing? And we went out there and we kicked his ass that day and ended up winning the race. And it was a really tight, I don't know if you'll ever get the chance to go back and watch that race or if you've seen it, but I was holding off Ty Gibbs, and I was really having to move around my corners and reshape them. And we've done a lot of work throughout the years of the car not being the absolute best of what you need to drive it, but you need to figure out a way to drive that car to its optimal standards. So the guy I got that I work with, his name's Josh Wise in the Chevrolet program. And there's probably 15 or 20 drivers between the Cup Series, Xfinity, and Truck Series with Chevrolet that are in his program. And we spend time throughout the week on Thursdays talking about, you know, how can we, like, we'll go to the simulator, we'll go do iRacing. How can you drive this setup as optimal as possible? And that's really where that focus came to of trying to expedite that process of, instead of spending two or three sentences, you spend two or three words. Hey, try the Gary line, try the Noah line, try the Riddick line. And we took that down to braking approaches, how we wanted our brake trace to be, if we wanted it to be a really high spike and then come off of it really, really fast, get a lot of brake pressure done early, or if we want to have it more of a plateau and not as much brake pressure initially and carry that out for longer. Different opportunities like that where It really helps. So that all comes from the preparation and stuff that I've really learned throughout the years of, hey, this is every little thing you can do to communicate better with your team. That's what's going to help you win races. And I really believe once we started doing that, we went on a tear. We started winning. I think we won Pocono, and then a few weeks later, we won at Darlington, and then we won four in a row after that. So it was a big year for us, and really it just came down to having as much fun as possible when we're at the racetrack and being as much prepared as we could.
Yeah, I mean, like you guys had an absolute year last year and you dominated. And I think what you just said needs to be said so much more often and amplified to the average fan. You know, they see you out there, I don't want to say goofing off, but you know, suit undone, hair flowing in the wind. Looks like you're just kind of fast and loose. And I don't think they can appreciate, you know, how technical you get, like to the point where you're talking about, you know, you've got a little bit more balance, you know, or if the car is tight, you're going to run this line, you're going to heat up the brakes, you know, you're going to run it like that. Like, I don't think, you know, the average person really appreciates how much preparation can go into
Well,
it.
I don't mind looking like the ass clown out there with the suit undone, and as long as you're getting the job done, that's all that matters. And for me, I think personally, maybe not everybody will agree with it, but if I'm a competitor and I see somebody doing stuff the way I'm doing things, and we had an unbelievable year, and I mean, we had a really good year, I'll put it that way,
Yeah.
but
You dominated.
if I'm losing to a guy like that, I'd be really mad. So I kind of do stuff to, I always try and do things with a plan, in a sense, and with purpose. And if it's creating more media attention, you could go out there and run 13th. Horrible day, right? But what can you do to put a positive spin on things and get your name out there? They're not gonna write an article about a guy 13th, but they might write an article about a guy that looks like Tim Richmond or something, So, but
Yeah.
I'm very technical, with the analysis of the cars and everything, and just trying to always learn and be better.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny, I interviewed Paul Tracy and that was his dad told him every race, like if you're not gonna win it, make sure everyone's talking about you after the race if you don't win.
Yep.
And I thought that was
Exactly.
pretty
I
good
mean,
advice.
you got to sell as many t-shirts as possible.
Yep.
That's my goal.
But absolutely. With all my race guys, I want to hear about when you were young and when you were first exposed to whatever it was, motorsports, or just like having fun on a dirt bike or go-kart racing, or if it was like, you know, your dad was crazy and saying, "Hey, he's going to cup," you know, from a 5-year-old age. What was the story for you?
Yeah, it wasn't nobody in my family ever raced, and I look back at it now that I'm a little bit more mature, not a lot mature, a little bit more mature, I gotta put it that way. I start to see things as a different perspective, and now that I'm getting older, I can kind of see more of the perspective of an adult, right? So to be a 13-year-old kid, that's when I started racing. I always loved dirt biking, mountain biking, snowboarding, skateboarding, all those action sports. I grew up watching the X Games, and I remember seeing racing on TV growing up. I was always a big fan of any kind of racing there was. If I could race you in a shopping cart in the grocery store, let's see who can get to the end of the aisle, I was gonna rough you up and get to the end of the aisle before you could. And so, with that being said, I think my parents, they saw the passion behind, how much I loved racing, and I would beg my dad, hey, can we go? Like, I went to my buddy Riley Herbst. He had a modified trophy cart, which is basically a little off-road go-kart with a 450 dirt bike engine in it with shocks and roll cage and everything, and basically a mini scale truck. And I went to one of his races when I was probably 11 or 12, And that really gave me the racing bug. And I'm like, that right there, that's what I want to do. And with not having a family in a racing background, it kind of made it challenging of, okay, as a parent, where do we start this kid, right? Like you have to make an investment. You have to get to a point of, where do we go? Do we go to the go-kart track or where do we start? And so my dad started talking to one of his business partners, and he his kids race. They're a bit younger than me. I was 13 when I started racing back in 2012, and I remember my dad telling me, "Hey, do you want to go try and race? You want to go out and test a car at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway Bullring, which is a 3/8 mile paved short track?" And I was like, "Hell yeah, let's do it! Yeah, I want to do anything I can. This will be awesome." So, I had the opportunity to go out there. It was a Wednesday of my spring break, and we tested the car, a little Bandolero, out at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and I loved it. The first couple laps I did, I came into the pits. I'm like, "Do they want me to keep going? I want to keep going, but I'm not sure." So I'll pull this thing in and have the biggest smile ear to ear, and that's really when I knew, okay, this is what I truly love. But from a parent's perspective, seeing it now, how do you continue to support a 13-year-old when, yeah, I see 13-year-olds now and you're like, what are they into? Do they really want to do this? Because it's a big investment to go racing. And so we ended up, the season started that Friday. This was Wednesday. The season started that Friday. We ended up renting a car from a guy, and it was relatively cheap for racing. It was like $300 a weekend. We went out and we'd go race to the Bullring. Ended up winning the track championship in 2012, my first year racing. Granted, it was a Bandolero, but then moved up into a legend car, raced legend cars for 2 years. The first year in 2013, kind of did some local stuff in Las Vegas, didn't really travel. The next year, 2014, started traveling from the beginning. We went to Florida, North Carolina, up to Virginia for the Nationals. I mean, we hit every corner of the country.
That must have that those legend days, you must have really kind of, you start in your little bubble in Las Vegas, but then you go traveling to those places. And for people who don't know, Legends cars, they're the same everywhere you go. So you get a good taste of how fast you are. And did you run good that year?
Yeah, we ran good and won the world championship for the road course stuff, and like just raced a ton. It was just about, really when you first get started up until the truck series, if I was a parent, I'd say start in the back every single race and just learn how to pass. It's not about winning races at that level. I mean, it's cool to have that credibility and you're like, "Oh man, Rick Hendrick is watching this," but really they're not, unfortunately. And if I could do it again, I would have started in the back every race and just the grassroots level. If you're going to try and make a career out of this, you really got to try to learn and hone your craft and figure out your race craft as much as possible before you get up to the truck series. And my dad always said, "I don't want Noah in the best stuff. I want him in good stuff, but I don't want him in the best stuff where he's just gonna go win every race." And you're not really learning anything. You're not learning adversity or challenges. You're not having to go through those moments. And I think those moments are really what makes somebody a good race car driver. I see kids that I grew up racing with in the K&N series, which so we did 2013, 2014. My second and third year racing, we did that in legend cars, and we're at the Bullring. I made a couple of late model starts at the end of the 2014 season. I was just turned 16 years old, and they weren't getting a ton of cars. They didn't have really a strong field, and we're like, "Man, there's this SRL Southwest Tour, and we can go run that. That's late models, so kind of still the stock car avenue, or we can go run the NASCAR K&N Pro Series." There's this team called Gene Price Motorsports. They were selling the owner was selling the team, and the two crew chiefs were buying it. And that's where Jefferson Pitts Racing came from. So these two crew chiefs buy it. They already have this kid signed up, Grayson Raz. I didn't know who he was. We get to the first race, and they needed another guy to sign up to be able to fund it and whatnot and buy the equipment. Excuse me. So we end up running, pretty good and run second. Finished second in the standing a couple races the first year, and then you see kids that are in the best stuff and never have to go through any adversity, and then you get up to the Xfinity truck and cup level, and it kind of all shifts from then on. I guess that's the point that I'm kind of getting to is my dad always said, well, yeah, you can always go buy a trophy in these smaller level races, but what's
Yeah.
it really get you in the long run? And our focus was always, we want to do this as long as we can, but it's not going to be easy, and we like you gotta be passionate about it, which I think they saw from an early age that I was. And it's just I'm extremely grateful to have parents that believed in me as a 13-year-old, seeing it now, to invest money to get me started and into racing. And it's just it's really tough to make it, but I'm glad I've had those opportunities where, yeah, it might not have been, I'm not in shit, but I'm not in the best stuff where you're almost guaranteed to go win. You basically have to make a mistake to lose the race, not manage a race well and drive your ass off to win these things. And so that was really rewarding looking back at it, is when you beat those guys that were in really good stuff and bringing cars to the West Coast from the East Coast, that's what made it rewarding, is that we really had to work at it. And it was still fun during the Canaan times. Like, it wasn't a job at all. I would go to high school and I would think about racing all day, every day. But once I got into the truck level, that's when it really became, okay, this is a job. People are really relying on me to act like a professional, be a professional, drive like a professional on and off the track. And that's where going over to KBM, when we raced K&N series, it was fun. It was like racing go-karts with your buddies, and you unload the trailer and you go and you just drive your ass off. But going to the truck series, that was a big challenge for me, just from the sense of, okay, this is professional now. Like, you got people relying on you and being at your best. And it almost seemed like I operate, like we talked earlier, I gotta have fun. If I'm not having fun, I'm no good at all. And so
Yep.
we were just talking about this today. I was up at the Petty GMS shop and talking to them, and just kind of see, like we were like, we gotta have an Xbox in the hauler, so on our downtime we can play, PGA, or we could play Madden, or just whatever we can do to have competition, right? And so one of my crew guys, Dex, he's like, I've done the cup stuff, and these past 4 years going back to Xfinity, and we had so much fun. We had the most fun out of anyone, and I think that's what makes it so much more enjoyable going to the racetrack. Even if you're not winning, you're still having fun and you want to go back the next week. There's nothing worse than being miserable and being like, God, I don't like the culture here. And that's really what I struggled with when I moved out to the truck series, is a culture shock of it being professional. And I'm like, man, this NASCAR stuff's no fun because they don't have any fun around here. Like, and then I moved over to Junior Motorsports and really got a good group of guys around me. And not saying that the KBM guys weren't a group of guys that were good, or but it just, we all didn't mesh together. But this past 4 years at Junior Motorsports, we've really, really meshed well together. And that's kind of translated up into the Cup Series. Going into this 2023 season, we've taken crew chief, our engineer, and two of the mechanics over to Petty GMS to kind of still have that atmosphere and confidence going into the racetrack. Is We don't have to relearn each other. We don't have to relearn a new. They don't have to relearn a new driver. If they would have stayed where they were at Junior Motorsports, I wouldn't have to relearn a new team, and we can just hit the ground running.
No, that's great. That's huge to be able to bring that many guys for sure, because it does take so long to get on the same page for communication. But to quickly go back to, like, just how quick your rise was in motorsports, call it, because, you know, you're of the age where you're racing against guys who have been racing since they were whatever, 6, 7 years old, you know, with a serious plan in place. Were you shocked, or was your dad shocked at, like, how successful you were right away, like year two and three? Like, that's super impressive.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the K&N series, I'd say that was really a little bit of a turning point in my career. And I always saw the races on TV. I followed Dylan Kwasniewski. He was out of Las Vegas. And when I was racing legend cars, I'd pay attention to the K&N series. And I'm like, I watch all the YouTube videos and see all that stuff. I'm like, damn, this is so badass. Like, these guys are rock stars. They're like cup guys in my eyes. And I'm like, I told them, Jefferson Pitts Racing, they're like, do you have any goals to start the year? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe, you know, my goal is to finish top 10 in points, you know, have a couple top 10 finishes. Not, you know, I was setting my standards so low because I'm a young guy. I've never really raced stock cars. Going into the K&N Pro Series, there's a lot of good guys, Brandon McReynolds, David Mayhew, you know, Ryan Partridge, just a lot of good guys that I looked up to who had a lot of racing experience. I'm like, man, if I can run in the top 10, that, I feel like that'd be good. And going into my first race, we finished third. We won the third race I was in. And that was the turning point where I was like, okay, maybe we're good enough to do this. And, you know, my family made it very clear to me. They're like, you need to put in work and be focused and ready to go when you're at the racetrack, because this is almost like a make or break year for you if you're still going to be supported and racing. You know, we'll do this for a year, but, you know, if you suck, you're done. Like you're done racing. And so, you know, we ran really strong that year, and then just continued to try and win races, and went on to the next year, ran the K&N East and West Series, made two truck starts at the end of the year. And, but yeah, that third race in 2015, that was the turning point of, hey, can I do this? And, I've obviously come a long way, but that was one of the small stepping stones of, hey, we can try to continue to do this, and we can try to maybe think about getting to the next level one day, instead of just absolutely sucking. But, you know, it's taken time. I'm not the most talented guy by any means. And I look at my good friend Tyler Reddick. He's really, really talented behind the wheel. And my old crew chief in the Xfinity series, who now crew chiefs Eric Jones, you know, he put it in a way that really made a lot of sense to me, and that I could understand. And he's like, you don't have the talent of Tyler Reddick, but the work ethic that you have is gonna, in the studying and preparation that you put in, he's like, I'd put you right there with him. And this was months ago, but that really gave me a big boost of confidence, just because I really look up to Tyler. He's obviously a very good driver. He's won a couple NASCAR Xfinity Series championships, and that kind of gave me a new wind up of motivation of like, hey, you keep working hard enough at this, and you might be able to make it.
Yeah, no, for sure. So going, you know, you have that success in the K&N series. What is the conversation like with your family saying, hey, give me a shot at the truck series? You know, this could be my launching point. Now you're set on, I want to be a professional race car driver. I want to make a living and get a paycheck from being a race
Well,
car
it goes
driver?
from winning races in the K&N series and then having those conversations, okay, what's next, right? And obviously it's really expensive to run in their truck series, Xfinity series. Any racing's expensive, and I've had some family support, but it's just not really doable to go race on, full family support in the truck series, right? So then it's like, okay, well, we can go talk to teams. It's kind of like the chicken and the egg. Do we want to find a team first and then go find sponsorship, or do we go find sponsorship and then find a team, right? And so we went through some of the connections that we had in Las Vegas, and one of them was Switch Data Company, and they do a lot of, data servers and stuff for a lot of big companies. And so worked out a program with them, and that was kind of at the same time as working on trying to find a truck series ride. And we talked to GMS, we talked to Kyle Busch Motorsports, talked to Brad Keselowski's guys a little bit. And you got to do it right if you're going to do it, in my opinion, and have the opportunity to go out there. If you're going to race a full season, you really have to do this racing deal right the first time. In my opinion, and really my family's opinion, we always said you rarely get second chances if you even get one. So we went and talked to Kyle at KBM, and he kind of looked over, my stats in the K&N series, and talked to him, and he was like, "All right, yeah, let's try it, let's do it." And so we ended up signing a deal with KBM for the 2017 season, and it was rough. I wrecked my first lap, just took the green, made a lap, and then crossed the start finish line at Daytona. First race of the year, first real, starting off my rookie campaign as a truck series driver, and get turned by Austin Cindric in front of the field and collect the whole field. And like, shit, that didn't go as planned. Like, you just go from the being at the highest of highs of I'm about to race my first full season in trucks to you're done before it even starts. And then the way the truck series schedule is worked out, it's tough. It's you have Daytona, and at the time you'd wait 3 or 4 weeks, and then you'd race Atlanta, and then you'd race 3 or 4 weeks. I was still going to high school in Las Vegas, so I wasn't at the shop for the first half of the year until I completed high school, until about June, May or June. And so that was really tough, wrecking, having to go back to Vegas and do schoolwork, and all you can think of, I want another shot at this, right? I want to get back out there and show them what I can really do, because this isn't that I didn't show anybody what I could do. Well, you wait 3 or 4 weeks, you get out there in Atlanta. My practice went all right. We had some speed. I didn't have the preparation or focus. I thought I was doing everything right, but I wasn't even close to being, looking at things going into the race weekend the way I look at things now. And the way I look at things now, it's not going to be the way I look at them in 5 years from now either. But I thought I was doing the best that I could. Go out there for the race, qualified, I don't know, 10th, not great, and end up spinning into turn three, first lap. Get some damage, run around, finish like 13th or something. Horrible day, right? Go back to Vegas, keep doing high school, then you wait another 3 weeks, and I'm like, okay, I really gotta show. Like, I felt already written off at this point over at KBM. 2 weeks in. And it's not like you can race week to week and keep learning. When you have a month in between 3 weeks to a month, it's hard to keep that confidence. And you're just replaying that same mistake in your mind, and you're like, God, I suck. And then you start to have self-doubt. We went to Martinsville a couple weeks later, ended up running fourth, which was good. I was like, okay, we're back on track. Like the K&N stuff, it all came easy to me. I never prepared for it. I just thought I could show up and my talent was going to do it for me, but it really didn't. And really the thing that I've learned throughout this whole process of racing in the truck series and kind of getting written off early in the truck series with KBM is, and I look back at it now, over the 2 years I was there, I really didn't know my process throughout the week and what it needed to be. But these last 3 years at Junior Motorsports, that's really taught me, you know, what I need to look for when I get to the racetrack, how I need to approach it and all that. And I wish I could go back. You don't know what you don't know. I always tell people, like these younger guys, when they come ask me for advice now, I'm like, they're like, what do I need to think of or what do I need to do? I'm like, the hardest part that you're going to run into is you don't know the questions to ask because you just don't know what to ask. You don't know what you don't know. And having the experience, I wish I could go back and knowing what I know now, go back and redo my truck series career because it was god awful. It was terrible. We won two races. We won Martinsville later that year in 2017. Had a lot of poles in 2018, but only won one race, led a lot of laps, but ultimately finished second in the championship. Really didn't perform near to par as what was needed, especially to the KBM standard. And you know, I was shot on my confidence. I really was. I had zero confidence at KBM, and I wasn't having fun. I wasn't truly enjoying it. And having a new opportunity at Junior Motorsports, new faces, kind of a way for me to be like, okay, here's kind of a restart. I know it's moving up to the next level, but here's a little restart. And that was really good for me to get over to kind of a different company and not saying anything bad about KBM. I wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, no, fair enough. You know, it's tough jumping to a team and jumping to, and I don't know Kyle at all or his attitude there, but through my racing a little bit, I've raced for different guys who expect to win every weekend. You know, they know their stuff is the best. They know they're giving you the equipment to win,
Oh,
and they'll put a little
there's a ton of
pressure on
pressure
you.
at KBM because they've won so many championships, they've won so many races. So that is the thing is you get there and you're expected to win, right? So it's tough. That pressure, it eats at you.
Yeah. When I saw you last, which was at Mosport in 2018, you and you were hanging with, well, Brendan McReynolds was touring around with you. How did that relationship kind of start and evolve?
Yeah, so Brandon, he's raced since he's been super young, I think 7 or 8 years old, and he grew up here in North Carolina. His dad actually crew chiefed in the Cup Series for a handful of guys. Davey Allison, Dale Sr. won the 500 with Dale Sr. Brandon grew up, with a racing background, and being
In it.
with my background, we didn't really know. We started learning about racing and learning about the business side of stuff and learning about, meeting new people and whatnot, but we didn't have any relationships or anything. So I raced against Brandon my first year in 2015 in K-N, and he was driving the Bill McNally Napa car, the 16 car, and we did the 2015 season. And I didn't know Brandon at all. I talked to him a couple times, and kind of like what we talked about earlier, I think we got done qualifying at Irwindale, and he's like, "Who's this jackass kid out here?" And we actually got to Sonoma later that year, about midway through the season, and I was passing him on the last lap, and our stories are completely different. But I was driving in, and I was set up into that final hairpin at the end of the Sonoma track, and I was all the way to the right, just committed to outbraking him and getting to the inside. I was going to stop in time, and he says that I ran him over. I say he backed up into my hood. But long story short, I was committed to driving into the corner. I wrecked the shit out of him, and he was ready to come beat my ass. And His crew chief the prior year was my teammate's crew chief this current year, so he had a really good relationship with him, one of the team owners at our team. And they started talking, and he met my dad, and they talked, and I was 16 at the time. I didn't really know what I was doing, and now I see the significance of it, but I surely didn't back then of what had just happened. And I was like, man, I got one more spot for the championship. That was great, huh? But so that's kind of how our relationship started, is I wrecked the shit out of him. And then we go to Idaho track the next couple weeks after that, the next race, and he had like a sway bar arm come off, and so he was already having a bad day. And I was like, oh shit, I just wrecked this guy last weekend. I got to get away from him. And I was trying to pass him, and he's giving it all I can handle. I mean, he's trying to wreck the shit out of me. And we still laugh about this story. We tell it a couple of times a year just to have a good laugh. But he's doing everything he can, and I'm hanging on this thing sideways. He's got my rear tires lifted off the ground, and he's like, man, I was trying to wreck the shit out of you because I was over you, but I just couldn't wreck you. I was trying everything I could. And so we talked shortly after that. He's like, all right, we're good, we're even. Like, I tried to get you, I couldn't. And so,
Yeah.
transpiring into that later that year, Todd Gillen was coming in with some money to drive that 16 car. So it was booting Brandon out, to where he wasn't driving that thing anymore. And we were like, my dad was like, we should hire Brandon to like driver coach you, and kind of have some. It was a little bit to driver coach me, but it was more for the long run approach of like, let's get this guy. He's got really good relationships out on the East Coast. He knows a lot of people around there. He kind of knows, how to work the sponsorship deal a little bit. And so he started out as a driver coach role, but and that lasted, through 2016. And he really taught me. I mean, right away, the first time we were at the racetrack, he's like, where's your notebook? Like, notebook? Why do you need a notebook? I don't, school was this week. Where this is the weekend, dude. What are you talking about, notebook? He's like, you need a notebook. You need to take down notes for everything you do, every thought you have at the racetrack, and everything you think about the car, and how the track is and the temperature outside. And that's really where I started learning kind of how to prepare. But yeah, he went from K&N series and a little bit early in trucks to driver coach and then being on the radio too. Now he's kind of transpired into a full-time manager role, and working on sponsorship stuff. And now he just does pretty much all, everything I need outside of being on the racetrack, scheduling, management stuff, partner relationships, all that kind of stuff. The headache that kind of takes away from me, in a sense, and just allows me to focus on driving. So, yeah, you can turn every negative into a positive. I feel like it went from him being super pissed off and ready to tear my head off after I just wrecked the shit out of him, to now we're best buddies, and I talk to him every day. So it's pretty cool just to see how he's grown as a person. He didn't go to college for a business, major or anything. He's kind of self-taught, and he's done a really good job landing a lot of deals, with our program, and it's been cool to see his progression.
Yeah, no, that's cool, 'cause he's not a whole ton older than you really, and so you guys have kind of grown together.
No, he's
Yeah.
30 or
Right.
31.
Right. No, that would make at least the day-to-day fun in my eyes
Yeah, it's
anyways.
cool because I look back now. I'm 24 now, and that's kind of when he started with me. I'm like, damn, I just am looking back thinking if I was in that position, how I would handle it. And he's handled me a lot better than I would have handled somebody like myself at this age,
Yeah. You alluded to it before, but I want to ask you if it was a, I guess I've known you when we met, you were pretty young and you were kind of always this, class clown type guy a little bit. Was it a conscious effort really after the KBM deal to be like, hey, I'm going to embrace who I am in front of the camera and, you know, not care what people think. I'm just going to be me. Was it a conscious decision to be more yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Like when I was at KBM, I did not feel comfortable in my own skin at all. And just with all the pressure and not getting the results, I'm like, I have to be somebody I'm not, and really didn't enjoy it. And so when I moved up into the Xfinity series, and I was like, you know what, I'm just screw this. I'm just gonna be me and have fun. Like having fun is the best way I operate throughout the week. Why not take it into the racetrack too, and enjoy myself, really enjoy it? Because you look back, and I'm sure you might have had these moments of when you get you might be laying in bed one night, can't sleep, and you're like, man, if I could just go back to this one day and just relive this experience and like stand on top of the car and pump the crowd up after a win or something. Like I was like,
Yeah.
I need to start really appreciating the moment, because they say these years go by faster and faster as you get older, and I feel like they've already gone by fast. And it's like that. I need to really take in and appreciate it, and I'm just gonna be me. And so I think junior motorsports, the culture, the people over there, they really allowed me at the end of the day. And I've obviously taken it too far at times, probably, but at the end of the day, I think that's how I operate best, is when I am me and I'm having fun. And I'll bring a speaker out to pit road, or driver intros, and I might irritate the other guys, but you just gotta basically walk out there in a non dickish way, I would say, like in a humble way of you gotta go out there and say, I'm gonna go win today, and be confident and kind of have that swagger. And I think when you see other guys doing that, it might intimidate you a little bit more. And when you see other people having fun and you're not having any fun, you get jealous of it. And I don't really see a whole lot of guys having that much fun,
Yeah.
and I want to have as much fun as possible. And if that intimidates guys, so be it. But I know in the Xfinity series, when I walked down pit road this year, blasting music, I'm like, oh yeah, all these guys are my bitches today. Like, we're gonna go have some fun.
That's good. That's good. The first time that I really saw you really kind of maybe, I don't know if it was stepping over the line or not, but I remember you won the Snowball Derby and you tried to kiss the trophy girl. That's
Yeah,
what
so
comes
that
to
was a good
mind there.
story. Yeah, so I won the Snowball Derby, and just the history behind that race. I think it was the 51st running of that race, and some big names have won it. And you always see pictures of, these guys back in the day kissing the trophy girl. So I'm like, all right, if I ever win this thing one day, like, I'm getting kissed by the trophy girl, right? So we end up winning and go in to kiss the trophy girl. I just thought that's what you did. Like,
Sure.
it's a historic race. I'm like, let's kiss the trophy girl. So I end up kissing the trophy girl. She kind of swerves me a little bit, gives me a, not today, bucko. And so I'm like, I probably won't ever win this race again. Like, we gotta have a picture of the trophy girl, like the good old days, right? Well, then I pretty much got canceled on Twitter, from her swerving me, and people were saying some bad stuff and saying that, just, yeah, bad stuff, trying to cancel me basically. And
Yeah.
so I was like, all right, let's run with this. So we had the NASCAR banquet the next weekend, and I asked her, do you want to, we were texting and whatnot, and she came over and asked me for my number after the race. And I was like, all right, let's do a PR play on this, and I'll show everyone what's up. And so I'm like, you want to come to the banquet with me as my date? And so I posted a picture on Instagram a long time ago, 2018, and I said, Miss Snowball Derby came back for another weekend or something.
Yep.
Not that bad, but yeah, people weren't pumped with me on that, but Hey, you live and you learn.
Oh, I think you recovered from it well, you know. I think that was probably the best way to go about it is, hey, actually
Yeah.
she's a willing date.
Yeah, like, yeah, people just, I don't know. They want something to fuss about, I feel like.
So winning the Snowball Derby, you know, for people outside the sport, they don't realize how big that is, but that must have been another shot in the arm, like, holy cow, like I can actually do this. I can hang, you know, I can run with guys who are making a living racing late models like this and go out in there and beat them. Did anyone,
I got the trophy right there.
oh, right on, right on. Did you get the recognition, you know, from that win? Were people reaching out to you saying, hey, good job, like people, like big name guys?
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest wins of my career. I don't think a ton of people know about the Snowball Derby like you're saying, but people within the stock car industry, I'd say it's definitely a prestigious race. It'd be like probably winning Monaco in F1, but it's really prestigious, and the best of the best guys go there in all short track racing. So running NASCAR and stuff, we didn't run many races like super late model races that year. I think ran a handful, maybe two or three. That might have been my second race of the year. So I didn't run a ton, so it's hard to get into a different car. Obviously, I was with a good team at KBM and whatnot, but I one thing that sticks out in my mind of how big that race is, and that's when Dale Jr. texted me after the race, and he said, "A lot of good guys have run this race and never won, including my dad." And I was
Wow.
like, "Holy shit." That kind of puts this into a whole nother perspective of how big this race is and how long it's been going, and just the prestige of it. And there's a lot of good guys down there too in the short track world that are really good at what they do. I mean, they race these cars, and it might not be the Cup Series, but I'd put them up there against all of them. I think that's why you see Kyle Busch and Chase Elliott and William Byron. Guys like that come and race these races. Eric Jones is because of one, how much fun these cars are, but because you truly are racing the best of the best. And I truly love the Snowball Derby, and that was a one of the biggest wins I've ever had, is just because of that one simple text from Dale. Is my dad's A lot of good guys have raced this race and never won, including my dad. And I was like, wow. That's
Yeah.
pretty big.
That's got to feel good for sure, for sure. I was gonna ask you about what's his name? Josh? Is that the guy that you guys work with?
Josh Wise.
Yeah.
Yep, Josh.
So
So
is what's his title? Does he come on as like a sports psychologist or, you know, just someone from Chevrolet that you kind of work over the weekends with?
yeah, I think kind of what we've seen within the stock car world is every manufacturer kind of has their own personal trainer or their own deal to get these guys not just sitting on the couch, right? So you obviously have to be somewhat physically fit to be able to race a stock car for how many hours at 140 degrees inside the cockpit. So really, I think Jimmy Johnson kind of changed the whole way the sport kind of works now from a driver's side. And he really stepped up the training program, and he had a lot of success. So these manufacturers saw this, and they're like, okay, we're going to build facilities. We're going to hire, personal trainers. And the Chevrolet deal is kind of unique. So Josh used to race in the he used to race sprint cars growing up and midgets, and then started racing NASCAR stuff, and he wasn't in great stuff, but the way he kind of explained it to me, he's like, I want to give you guys the opportunity that I didn't have. And he is really, really talented, and he's like, I wish I would have known what I know now. Like we were saying earlier, I wish I would have known now when I was racing, and I would have been a whole lot better, and I'm here to to kind of give you guys those resources and tools. And so it's just Chevrolet drivers and Josh Wise's deal. But we have Dan Jansen. He's an Olympic gold medalist of speed skating from back in the 80s or early 90s. He's our personal trainers or workout coaches, whatever you want to call it. But we do a little bit of everything, and from training and doing weights and running and biking to that's just a small part of Josh's program. We also do a lot of mental stuff too. I feel like keeping your brain strong and focused and confident, that's a big part of racing and getting to the racetrack. And your brain's very, very powerful. I don't know if you need to be the, you don't have to be, not that I don't know, you don't have to be the most physically fit guy to win these races, but if you can be the mentally strongest guy, you definitely up your chances. So we do a lot of reaction testing. Right now we're going through baseline stuff because it's the off season, but preparing for races. So we'll go in. So I work out every day at 7. So down even when I'll leave. So like last year it was really, really busy because to give you a run through of kind of my week and my day, at least last year I was racing Cup and Xfinity to end the year. So that was a bit of a challenge. I would race on Saturdays, race on Sundays, get home late, 1 or 2 a.m. I was doing some 5:45 workouts on in the mornings as well, and then go to a 7 a.m. workout. So there was a some weeks in a row there where I'd land at 2 in the morning, be up at 5 in the morning. You don't get to bed, your mind's still racing from that night from the race. And one night I got 1 hour and 37 minutes of sleep to start my week off Sunday night, going into Monday morning. Wake up, go to a 5:45 workout at Junior Motorsports, go to Josh Wise's at the Chevrolet facility down in Concord. Spending a lot of time driving, which was long. So I'd go down to Chevrolet, work out there at 7. Then I would get done there, go up for a morning competition meeting at Junior Motorsports Monday morning. Then I would go at 11 down back down to where the Chevrolet deal is. Hendrick Motorsports campus is right next to that. I'd have an 11 a.m. meeting there, post-race competition debrief meeting there. And then I'd go back to the shop and just keep trying to build relationships. I think relationships are so key, in this sport and keeping everybody happy. Try to take the guys to lunch, just trying to always build, these race relationships and confidence between everybody, and just appreciate everything. They're working their tail off, so if I could work my tail off just as hard, we're going to be that much better. So that would just be a Monday, and then we'd go to the kart track and do some karting on Tuesday, and some runs or some bike rides. And if I wasn't at Josh Wise's, I'd be at the shop till 4 or 5 at night. So I was really worn out doing that schedule, second half of the year. And then you go on through the week, get to Thursday. I know I'm skipping Wednesday, but that'd be another gym workout day and whatnot, and doing some other stuff, maybe simulator or pit practice. Go on a Thursday, have another 7 a.m. deal at Josh Wise's, doing pre-race prep. So I'd be in there with all the Chevrolet Xfinity guys in his program, which was 5 or 6 of us. And we'd go back and watch the races, have all this data, and it makes it so much more efficient from a driver's standpoint. Is he's got like 3 full-time people working on data and putting together charts and graphs of, hey, this is where these restart lanes were when this guy restarted from the 5th row inside. This is the average running position after a lap. This is the average running position after 3 laps. Here's some data you can look at. Here's some techniques let's work on for this weekend. Really, really hands-on, and that's what makes it, I don't know what I would do. I definitely wouldn't be the race car driver without Josh's program, just because he's got three full-time people working on getting all this information, put out into a spreadsheet and whatnot. So to have to do that myself would be, so mentally taxing. When it's already prepared, ready to go, when we get in there, that's what's, makes it a lot more efficient and, just so much easier as a driver standpoint to prepare for these races. And it's a constant grind. It's not just like race on the weekends and you go. I mean, it's all you what you want to put into it, right? You see guys that'll go golf 3 times a week that are running in the Xfinity Series or Cup Series. But I'd rather spend that time instead of golfing, building relationships, studying, working out, doing all that kind of stuff.
Oh, for sure. Because I, like you said, when you go to sleep 10 years from now and you're thinking back on those times you didn't win races, you're going to be thinking about the times you were goofing off at the golf course instead of, in the shop, giving it your all, because it is a narrow window. Even in racing, you get some longevity because it's not, it's you're not a triathlete, let's put it that way. But you still have a narrow window to get it done and get wins, and you gotta make hay when the sun shines.
It's tough. You don't want to ever look back and think, man, I could have done a little bit more.
No, for sure. Looking at maybe one bobble this season, and again, like, I don't watch every race or anything, but Road America, it looks like you got a little bit frustrated. To run me through that deal.
Past couple years, these road course races, some IndyCar guys will come in, some sports car guys will come in, and I don't know the mindset of open wheel racing, or sports car racing, but I do know that it's a little bit more, gentleman's agreement. If I have a nose in there, it's my corner or whatever it is. Stock cars, we race a little bit different. And one particular guy in particular, Sage Karam, I don't know if you know him at all, but couple races in a row, he'd come in and run these road course races and just beat the shit out of everyone. I mean, beat the living shit out of everyone. And we'll kind of door each other and rub each other, but I told him, I'm like, I don't know. After the Road America incident, what I'll get to is, I don't know if you are so used to these open wheel deals where you guys don't touch and you feel like you have fenders now and you're in a stock car that you can just absolutely demolish everyone. But I'm like, that's not how we race around here, man. And we get to Road America, and this is after a couple races have already gone by, and I'm already fed up with this dude for just not really racing with too much respect. And I made a mistake, and by the third time in that particular race, he would door you and run you off the racetrack. I'm like, fuck this guy, I'm over him. Like, I'm getting him out of here. Like, if he's not gonna learn, I'm gonna teach him. And obviously I got taught because I hooked him on the straightaway. Just seeing red, he run me off the racetrack coming out of, I guess what they call turn three, but the second right-hander at Road America to go down that long back straightaway down the hill. And he run me off the racetrack, and I'm like, oh no, he's gone. I should have waited till we got to the break zone and just tried to send him in the tire barriers, but I'm like, I'm gonna get him, and I'm gonna get him good. And I did get him. But unfortunately, it costed a lot of other guys who piled up into him, race cars as well, and wrecking their stuff up too, not just Sage, which I intended it to be. But I was just over it, and he really still seems like he hasn't learned based off of road courses after that with, Indianapolis and Coda. But yeah, I hooked him, and some guys piled up into him, and I got fined 35 grand, fined 35 driver's points, and that ultimately cost us from winning, the regular season championship. But we still, the way NASCAR works, they have a regular season champion, and then they have a playoff format to where they start with 12 guys and they eliminate four guys every three races till you get to the last four guys and it's winner take all. So it ended up not really, changing the outcome of how our overall season was going, but it definitely was a learning opportunity for me. If you're going to wreck somebody, make sure you don't get anybody else involved and don't do anything really intentional, because you could cause injuries to other people, and that's not what we need. But yeah, at the moment, I was really over them and haven't really told this story very much, kind of the week or two following it, and they kind of made me out to be the bad guy. But shortly after that, it kind of changed the narrative. We started winning more races and whatnot, and they're starting to make us into the hero. But it's crazy how fast the media stuff will change people's perspective. You could be the zero one day, and then you have one good weekend, and you can be the hero. So I don't know. Look, use it as a learning opportunity.
For sure, for sure. You're looking at like how NASCAR is penalizing guys for what they see as retaliation, like with Bubba there. And I think it's more on their radar with the cup stuff because so many guys are getting hurt. Whether that changes or not going into next season. Were you nervous at all of hurting your head this year when you were doing those cup starts, kind of with what was going on?
Yeah, I mean, definitely the cup stuff. So we did 18 races this year, and the Xfinity car, I could, get hooked in the right rear and at Talladega and pound the fence, and you're going to be bruised and sore. But never did I feel like I had a concern for my safety in a sense of really getting hurt. But the cup car is so rigid, and they're putting in a lot of work to fix those issues. But there's no hiding the fact that people did get hurt this past year in the Cup Series. Unfortunately, Kurt Busch had the when he backed it in the wall, and they don't look like hard hits. They really don't. And Alex Bowman, Chris Buescher, he flipped. I think they said it was because of COVID is why he missed a race. But I can't speculate on him. But I know Alex Bowman and Kurt Busch and a couple other guys were considering maybe taking a weekend off just for the fact I've gotten asked to race a couple cars. I got asked to race Bowman's car when he was hurt for 5 weeks because blew a tire and backed in the wall, and there's no damage to the car. But when there's no damage to the car, that just gives you opportunity for the energy and all those G forces to go straight to your body. So you really want the car to crumble. The more the car can crumble, it's dissipating that energy from the wreck and not just shocking your body. So that being said, it definitely was in the back of my mind racing for an Xfinity Series championship of how much do I really need to, is this race gonna matter, if that makes sense? I obviously tried. But am I going to risk a spot going from, 13th to 12th? Is it really worth it if I'm racing for an Xfinity Series championship? Not really, in my opinion. I don't want to say I laid back by any means, but I tried to be more calculated with when I was passing guys and on restarts and tried not putting myself in positions where I was going to get wrecked, just having that in the back of my mind of, hey, this could end with you getting really hurt and you missing out on chasing Xfinity Series championships. So that was a bit of a challenge, navigating that and being outspoken enough to where you had a voice and not speak up. I don't want to say they don't want you to speak up, but I probably could have chose my words a little more wisely throughout the season on what my intentions were on cup racing. But at the end of the day, the Xfinity Series championship is was my main priority and my main goal, and I wanted to eliminate every opportunity I had, from keeping me to race for that championship. And one of those was racing on the Cup car at my full potential, I feel like.
Yeah. You mentioned you did a bunch of races in the 48 for Alex Bowman there. Is that the end goal for you, is to go race for Hendrick?
I really don't know where I see the next future to be after the next 3 years. Right now I'm pretty set on being at Petty GMS for the next 3 years.
Is that your contract, 3 years?
That's my contract, yeah. They've hired me for a 3-year contract, and I really like what they're doing. They're making a lot of changes with Jimmy Johnson. They're making a lot of changes with the upper management staff. Maury Gallagher's got a ton of just hunger and drive to make this team a winning organization. So I'm grateful to have the opportunity to drive for Hendrick Motorsports and be able to run those races for them. And it was wild that day I got the call to fill in for Alex. And I'm glad he's okay now. And definitely sucks having to drive somebody else's car or have seen somebody else in your car. It's just not a good, situation as it is, but tried to make the best of it. And I was actually planning to run the Cup race at Talladega, which was the week after Alex had the incident at Texas. And Thursday I got a call. I was driving my crew chief's kids to the skate park, and we were gonna go skateboard a little bit. And I got a call from some guys over at Hendrick Motorsports and Chevrolet, and they asked me, "Hey, would you like to race the 48?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" Like, they're like, "Over here at Hendrick Motorsports, Alex has got a concussion." I'm like, "Holy shit!" Like, sure. And the team that I was driving for, Beard Motorsports, a 62 car at Talladega. This is Thursday. We're flying out the next morning. The haulers are already on the road. So we had one employee at Beard Motorsports, one, Darren Shaw, and he made just everything happen for that team. And in the back of this little, I don't know, 4,000 square foot shop, maybe.
Wow.
Small shop running a Cup program out of it. He made it happen out of there and got a Cup car to the racetrack with one guy working on this thing. To go there that morning and then get that phone call to drive for Hendrick Motorsports, arguably the biggest team in NASCAR, the most well-known team. I mean, a lot of championships. They're the powerhouse, right? So to get that phone call and then end your day at a 4,000 square foot garage, basically, with one employee, to the powerhouse Hendrick Motorsports, 500, 600 employees, a lot of championships, all that stuff. It's like, holy shit, this is crazy. Like, it the way I referenced it, which is probably not a great reference, but imagine somebody saying, "Hey, we need you to walk from New York to Los Angeles on your 2 feet," and then you're tying your shoes, about to head out and start walking, and they say, "Wait, wait, 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 wait. We got a 747 private jet all decked out with everything you need. Gonna pick you up and actually fly you there." It's like, holy shit. And I was just trying taking in that opportunity, and I took the kids home to my crew chief's house and drove down there. And the first people I saw was Jeff Gordon. He's like, "Well, you ready?" I'm like, "Shit, I don't know. We'll see." And went into meetings talking about, what all the different things we're gonna know, the code words, the switches that I had to flip for pit road, and all this different stuff that I wasn't accustomed to. I mean, we just came from a team where I would ask them, hey, what's our pit road speed so I can prep for this weekend? And they say, I don't know. Two, we have every resource possible. So that was pretty wild, 24, 48 hours, but it's a memory that I'll never forget.
Yeah, absolutely. I look at and I yeah, like you were saying, there's big changes in the off season for Petty GMS and obviously with Jimmy and hopefully you guys have like a stellar year. My question is though is how long are you prepared to pay your dues in the Cup Series and it still be fun? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Yeah. It's tough. You see these guys like Harvick, and I just had these conversations with people the past couple weeks, and they're like, you gotta make this fun because Harvick used to do this because it was fun. It's not really that fun anymore for him. So I don't know what that window is. I know the group I want around me and involved with the team, and I feel like if you can have good relationships with those people and enjoy your time together. We were just talking about it today. We were talking, they asked me, when are you getting a bus? I'm like, fuck, I ain't getting a bus. I'm going to the hotel. If we all can't stay on a bus, I'm not getting a bus. He's like, so we could still play. One of my guys, Dex, he's like, so you're still down to play Xbox at the hotel still? I'm like, fuck yeah, man. Like we're just a bunch of kids having fun. Even though, they're in their late 30s or 40s, it's still so much fun, at least right now. And I think as long as you can keep that going on, that's what really makes it all worth it to me. And right now it's not about making a paycheck. It's about enjoying what I'm doing. And if you can make a living doing it, you can't really complain.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's you've had such a successful last few years that it would be a big adjustment to go out and say run 20th or 15th or whatever every
Hard.
weekend.
It's hard.
And I always say like racing is some of the best medicine for someone with a big ego, 'cause it's not like hockey, it's not a win or lose, it's not a binary. You could go out and lose every single weekend,
Yeah,
for
you can never
multiple
win
years.
again. You can never win again. That's what's tough. That's what we've been talking about. It's like, how can we keep this program where we're still having fun and we're still enjoying it? And he just said it today. He's like, I know this. He's pointing at me. I know this little motherfucker is going to be pissed off after we finish, 20th or 15th or whatever it be. But as long as we can keep this deal going the way we've had it in Xfinity and still find the positives and still enjoy it, that's how we're gonna grow and get better and hopefully one day get to the point where we can win cup races.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess you just gotta recalibrate and pick your battles and say, hey, that's a win for us this weekend. Where I've heard, I don't want to say from the horse's mouth, but close to it, that there's eventually going to be a cup race in Canada. Where should that be? Should that be at Mosport or the Formula One Montreal track?
I don't know. I've always wanted to I've been to Mosport and I loved it. Like it's so badass. But I think just from the selfishness of not being able to race at Montreal. At the Formula One track, I would like to try it one time. But either way, if we can get to Canada, holy shit, the Canadians are so badass. Like, I love Canada. It's so awesome. And the fans there, the people there, they're so nice. They're just so awesome. And if we can get to either one of those tracks, it really wouldn't matter to me. As long as we can get up there, because I absolutely truly love it up there.
Yeah, it would be a massive race, and I used to go to watch the Pinty's races in kind of like 07, 08, 09 at the Montreal track
Oh,
in
they
the
had them
Busch
there?
Series. Yeah, they were the Saturday for the Busch Series on the
Yeah.
Sunday. And like they would pack the Formula One stands for the Busch Series race. It was insane there. Like if they brought a Cup Series race there, it would for sure be the most well-attended race in NASCAR.
Yeah, I mean, just going to some of these truck races when I used to race trucks and then going up to Mossport. I mean, 60,000, 70,000 people, right? And the place is packed for the trucks. I mean, those are bigger crowds than we see all year for the Truck Series or, even Xfinity Series and sometimes Cup races. Like, that's a lot of people. So, yeah, the passion and the support from the Canadian fans for NASCAR is definitely well received, in my opinion, and well noticed. And I think it might not be fully appreciated of at least right now because we don't have a race in Canada. Once we get a race in Canada, I think people are gonna see how much Canadians really do appreciate the sport of NASCAR, and I know I felt very welcomed as a driver going up there to Mossport and seeing all the fans and attendance and having a good time and whatnot. It's really special to see as a driver.
For sure, for sure. Man, before I let you go, you're obviously a guy, you're about to make your full-time Cup Series kind of rookie run. You've done it right from, running at KBM, running at Junior, absolutely having a bang up season last year. What advice or piece of advice do you have for young guys, kids, or even, say their parents who are guiding them on how to go about this, how to walk the path of becoming a professional race car driver?
There's a few things, but one, make it really important to have as much fun as possible. I know I've said it before, but have absolutely as much fun as possible. Take the necessary measures of being prepared and trying to be as prepared as possible and doing the extra work and writing everything down. Get a notebook, like Brandon McReynolds told me one time. Get a notebook, write everything down. Even if it's not physically pen and paper, which I don't really do anymore, I just type it into my notes app. I have folders for every track, and I'll start a new note, whatever I'm thinking. Hey, I heard somebody say this about this track in this corner. I'm gonna write that down, and you'll forget it. But like my buddy Zane Smith, he was saying, like, yeah, my only focus at Phoenix this year was to stay out of the river, and I never thought of that. But like, go where the rubber's not laid down at around these asphalt tracks. I'm like, wow, that's an interesting point. Let me write that down. And it might not really mean anything, but if you can take away any little thing and write it down, and then go back and look at it in a year or next time you race at that track, that's really important. And then start in the back as much as you can and learn how to pass and hone your craft. And unfortunately, the reality of things are, winning races at the short track level, yeah, they definitely help and move you up. But at the end of the day, if you want to be in the top levels of racing, you have to be the best, one of the best drivers in the world. And at the end of the day, starting up front and leading every lap, yeah, you got to do that sometimes to learn how to lead races. It's still hard to lead races, but have opportunities where you have challenges, have opportunities where you have adversity, and go through those experiences and become stronger mentally and stronger when you get put in those adverse situations. And that's going to help you in the long run so much more than just going out there and winning every single race. And make it, don't make, you don't need to make it a challenge. Obviously, starting in the back is going to make it a challenge, but do it so you can hone in your craft and become a better race car driver. Because in 10 years down the road, if you're racing, local races or whatever you're racing, it's going to help you 10 years down the road more than it's going to help you a year down the road winning every race, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's good advice. Well, next time we do this, man, I'll zip down to Charlotte and bang off a week of podcasts. So hopefully we do it in
Yeah.
person.
You got a place to stay if you ever need to come down here. You always got a place, buddy.
I appreciate it. Maybe I'll use your house as a studio then.
Yeah, you can. You're more than welcome
Cool.
to.
Cool. Well, best of luck this year if we don't chat. Everyone's you got a lot of fans out there. I'm sure you get a lot of DMs and whatnot, but people love you, dude. Don't change.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Gary. And thanks to all the fans. And make sure you support this guy, Gary. He's a good guy.
Thanks, man. If you guys enjoyed this podcast, send it to some friends and give it a 5-star rating. See you next week.